Our next speaker is Catherine Kramer, who you probably heard about her book, The Politics of Resentment. Has a lot to say about the state of people's understanding of each other and their relationships. And I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Catherine Kramer.
Really an honor to be here, and I'm feeling bad that my back is towards some of you, so I'm going to try and take this out so I can see you. Okay, so I'm feeling very proud to be a Wisconsinite this morning. It's really great to be here. The title of my book and the topic of what I have to share with you all, I know, is pretty depressing, but I'm going to try to be uplifting as possible. Briefly, I'm just going to explain what I did and how I did it, because I think one of your themes today, one of our themes today, is listening. And I've learned a lot about listening in the past decade, and so I want to share a bit of what I know. So about a decade ago, back in 2007, I had just earned tenure at UW-Madison, and while I was sprinting for tenure, I was trying to design a study that got me out and about around this state that I love, that helped me understand how people interpret politics. I wasn't looking for a rural versus urban divide. Honestly, I grew up in just north of the Milwaukee metro area in Grafton, which is now part of the metro area. Spent most of my life in the state, but was not aware of the resentment that I was about to hear. But I sampled communities from across the state, knowing that in each of these places I was going to try to find a group of regulars to just invite myself into, because I found over time that the best way to learn about how people interpret politics is to sit down with them and listen to them talk to the people in their lives and the places that they normally hang out in, not to call them in for an interview with me, a researcher on a college campus, but to go where they are in the course of their everyday lives. And so I sampled these communities from across the state with the help of local newspaper editors or extension agents. I said, where in such and such Wisconsin do people go on a regular basis where they just hang out with one another? And they pointed me to gas stations and diners and McDonald's and churches and such. And I would drive out to the community that I'd sample, typically early in the morning. Typically these are morning coffee clutches, and I'd walk in and I would say, hi, I'm Kathy from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Do you mind if I join you this morning? And they would laugh and they would say, sure, sit down, we've got nothing better to do. And then I would tell them who I was, I'd give them my business card, a token of my appreciation, which I then quickly said, this is not paid for by your taxpayer dollars, it's donated by the Alumni Association. And then I would turn on my recorder and ask, tell me, what are the big concerns around here? And they would tell me. And we would visit and talk, and I would go back a few months later, a year later, and again. And I was spending time in our cities and in our suburbs, but also in our small communities and our rural places. And about a year in, it was pretty obvious that a lot of what I was hearing was folks in these smaller places were telling me, we are not getting our fair share. And they were telling me that with respect to the cities. So what they were conveying to me is that, you know, it seems to us that all the stuff goes to the cities, all the attention, all the resources, and all the respect. By that I mean, they were telling me, you know, basically in Wisconsin, there's Madison and Milwaukee, and then there's the rest of us. Sometimes they say Madison, Milwaukee, the M&Ms, right? How many of you heard Madison and Milwaukee referred to that way? Well, then there's also this term outstate, right? Which really rubs people the wrong way. Outstate? How can we be outstate? Like, we're part of Wisconsin too, right? Well, folks were telling me, you know, all the decisions are made in Madison or Milwaukee, and they're communicated out to the rest of us, and it's just not the case that there's any listening going on in reverse. People are not paying attention to what's going on in our community. And then they would also tell me, you know, Madison sucks in all of our taxpayer dollars, spends them on itself or on Milwaukee, and we don't see that money in return. We don't get our fair share of that money. And finally, and I think most importantly now, in retrospect, looking back at the 2016 election, they were telling me, we don't get our fair share of respect. Those people making decisions don't know us, they're not familiar with us, they haven't spent time with us, and they actually don't really even like us. They think we're not educated and that we're racist and sexist and all the rest. A lot of other great things were going on in these places, don't get me wrong. And to be honest, as sobering as that all is, my time with these folks has been absolutely delightful. I mean, they've welcomed me in. A lot of times they're telling me this stuff through jokes, and it can be pretty enjoyable. But it's also pretty darn serious, and we've seen how it's mattered for our politics over the past few years. I thought I was done with my field work about 2009, and then Scott Walker got elected as governor, and I realized I have more to learn here. And I finished up my book in 2012, published it. 2016 campaign rolls around. It's time for me to go back and deliver a copy to all these folks, and I'm realizing I have more to learn here. Because what we saw was this sentiment of not getting one's fair share. That's part of the politics of resentment, but the other part is the way in which politicians can use it, tap into it, right? So Scott Walker comes around and he says, you're right, those public employees getting way more than their fair share. They're making way much more money than you. They have health care, they have pensions, and people had been saying to me since 2007, look, here's the deal. I can't afford health care for myself or for my family, and I'm being asked to pay taxes for those state workers, those public employees who do have health care. How does that compute, right? How is it fair that I'm paying for them to have health care when I can't even afford it myself? And so when Scott Walker came around, he said, you're right, roll it back, make them pay in more. That resonated with a lot of folks, right? Donald Trump comes along, very different politician, but basically he's saying, you're right, things are broken, you're right to be mad, you do deserve more than you're getting, and you know what? The people who are getting what you think you deserve don't deserve it, right? Immigrants, Muslims, uppity women, whichever group you want to point out, right? So these sentiments, they matter because people are figuring out how to tap into them. It's not necessarily new, right? I'm sure many of you who are familiar with our smaller communities in the state sort of know that it's kind of always been the case, right? That Madison and Milwaukee get all the attention and all this stuff. But something's different now, whether it's people figured out how to tap into it, or it's the confluence of all these different things going on, globalization, change in our economy, technology, what have you. But it's a sentiment that really matters a lot. Okay, so here's my more uplifting part. And that's about the listening. Because a lot of times people approach me these days and say, how did you do that? That must have been so difficult to go and listen to these folks and have these conversations with these folks. And really the most difficult part was just getting out of my car and getting into the gas station, like taking the big deep breath. But as soon as I said, hi, I'm Kathy, I'm here to listen to you. It was easy, because it's not very common that any of us get asked, what do you think? What are you concerned about? And then just have someone sit there and listen, as opposed to, okay, well, here's what I have to tell you. Here's what I'm selling you, right? People so appreciated the fact that I was there to just spend time with them and to listen to their concerns. And here's some examples. So there, I can imagine, or I can remember, one time in one of our medium-sized cities, I walked into a group of folks having breakfast, and they said, no way can you turn that recorder on, no way. And then 45 minutes later, they were saying, oh, can't you stay 5 more minutes? Joe's about to show up, and when are you coming back, right? And so as we talked, people realized, oh, it's really valuable to talk about what we think and to express our concerns. Well, when I'd show up to these groups a second time, they would often be just surprised. You're back, you know? I'd show up a third time and they would be absolutely bewildered. You're serious about this? And I'd say, yes, I am. And I think that my experience of how much people appreciated being listened to was really powerful. And I think it has gone a long way towards showing me just how much that is missing in our public life. We don't have time to listen, right? We don't have time. Well, I think we need to make time. But that brings me to a final point, and that is it the case that listening to some points of view legitimizes them? That's a really important question. I think our the sense you get from a lot of national media these days is that those people in rural America have these frightening views of other people in the population. But those of you, I know many of you here today, know from your personal experience, well, that's not right. That is not quite right, right? And it's not my experience either. When these folks are telling me that they're resentful, they're not using that word, right? That's my word I'm putting on it. What they're telling me is like, we are struggling to make ends meet and something is broken because we can't. And it doesn't seem like anyone's listening to that, and it doesn't seem like anyone is giving us the stuff we need in order to thrive. Sometimes what I hear is scary and racist and sexist and homophobic and Islamophobic, but most of the time what I hear is people saying, we are trying to do this as best we can, and it seems like nobody notices. So I say all that to say, there's some struggle these days about what the trick is. Do we now turn our attention to white folks in rural America, or do we turn our attention to people of color in our cities? And I don't think either is the solution. I think what we need to notice is that when you hear what I'm describing about what I've heard in rural Wisconsin, in some respects, it's exactly the same message as we hear in other parts of our state, other parts of our country, right? So when you think about what people say in Madison, people of color have been saying for decades about what it's like to live in Madison. What they're saying is, no one's giving us attention, right? No one's listening to our concerns. They're also saying, we don't get the stuff we need in order to thrive. And they're also saying, you know what, those people making decisions, they don't know us, they don't understand us, and they don't respect us. So I think the thing to notice is there's something fundamentally broken, right? It's not about rural America, it's not about our cities, it's about all of us. And that's why it's so great to be with you all here today, because I think you share that concern with me. And just by showing up on a rainy Saturday morning, you're showing that you want to do something about it. So it's my honor to be here, and have a great day. Thank you.